From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Monday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Neil is already in Birmingham, or Hoover, I guess I should say, for the SEC Media Days beginning today. I will join him later in the week for that. Today on the podcast, J.G. Tate, AuburnSports.com, one of your favorites, one of our favorites. Talk to Jay for a pretty good while today about Ole Miss, Auburn, and more coming up on the podcast, so we'll get you to that here soon. First, for as we do every single day, tell you the podcast is brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, lunch specials, ribs at night, all those good things, as well as when you combine the Oxford Exxon and the Oxford Crystal right next door, you get hand-spun milkshakes, chocolate, strawberry, vanilla, Oreo as well. Also, since it's pretty warm outside, they've got the Kool-Aid slushes. Those are made with Sprite, grape, one of Neil's favorites, as well as Green Apple there. So check them out both on Highway 6 West in Oxford. Again, the Oxford Exxon and the Oxford Crystal, and we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900 is the number. ClarkFordInc.com is the website. You call the number, you ask for Corey Clark, you tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he'll send you a quote in 15 minutes in business hours. It's really that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. It's just nice and easy. And then once you get your quote, you have two choices. You can shop around and see if you can get a better deal elsewhere. Good luck with that. Or you can take our word for it and let Clark Ford, Corey, and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many listeners of the podcast all over the South, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of your deal, tell Corey you heard about it on the podcast. You can mention this one. You can mention the Beer Garden. Either one. $500 off the bottom line. Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
SEC Media Day is kicking off today. Neil's got about an hour before he has to head over and have brunch at the Media Days with all of his closest friends before the scenarios get kicked off. Commissioner Greg Sankey and Brett Bielema are highlighting the morning session today. Austin Allen, Frank Ragnow, and Kevin Richardson, the second for Arkansas are the headliners this morning. Then Eddie O in LSU and Butch Jones in Tennessee, your afternoon session of day one of the 4 days of SEC Media Day. So we'll have some interviews for you on the podcast the rest of the week, some flavor from Hoover and more. But again, Sankey, Bielema, Orgeron, and Jones getting it kick-started today. Neil, I'm sure Birmingham is as lovely as always.
Yeah, I got here yesterday. So much has changed. So much has changed.
The banners are bigger. I see there's a six-story SEC banner now.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet.
You didn't need to stay at the Winfrey and feel the ambiance of the week?
You know, I know this will shock you, but I have so many hardcore sports writing, hardcore football fans that I was afraid, friends I should say, that I was afraid that if I stayed at the Winfrey it would be sensory overload.
Sensory overload.
So I'm out on 280.
Oh, you're like really out.
Yeah, I always stay really out.
You always do that. You never just stay in Hoover.
I don't like Hoover much. I don't really want to be around a bunch of sports writers.
You're not really around them when you just stay at some other hotel.
I don't care to socialize with them even. I just that's just me. I'll go do my job and get out of there.
What national guys are there this week? Which one's got that assignment?
I don't know.
Staples is there, I think.
I think Pat Forty's gonna be here.
Is Pat there this week?
Think so. By the way, let's address this quickly.
Okay.
There's people all over the place talking about the NCAA leaked to Pat Forty so that Pat Forty could write the story before signing day and hurt Ole Miss. I think Pat Forty said something on a podcast that he thought kids deserved to know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, paraphrasing, Pat gave a comment about how he thought that the players should have as much information as possible, and that it was, he did not use the term public service, but something along those regards.
Okay. Quickly, on one hand, he shouldn't say that. That's not your job as a reporter. Your job as a reporter is not to provide information to elicit change or to inform people before they make decisions. That's not your job. That being said, the people that are acting like what Pat Forty did in writing that story was some criminal action, you clearly don't understand journalism and his job. He did his job. His job was to break stories. He broke a story. He wrote that Ole Miss had received an NOA and that it was primarily about football and it was primarily the new staff. He was right. Did he get leaked that story by somebody? Obviously, that's how this works. Was that leak inside the NCAA? Yes. You want to get mad at the NCAA? Go for it. You want to get mad at Pat Forty for that? Nah, you're wasting your breath.
That was always going to be how that story broke. If it broke from anyone from with a national, regional, a non-school affiliated job, for the lack of a better term.
Yes. So you can't get angry at that. My opinion.
Also, now in saying that, and we're guilty of this too. This goes for everybody because it's easy, and we think everybody understands what we're saying as we just provide sentences and hours of commentary on the podcast and the message board and everywhere else. The NCAA is an entity in a single entity. However, it's made up of many, 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 many people in many different divisions. So when we go, well, the NCAA leaked it. Well, it wasn't a systemic thing where the NCAA issued a mandate for it to be leaked. There's one dude that Pat, or one dude or woman that Pat got, you know, a leak from. So it's a deal where it's really a hard thing. If you want to even go down this rabbit hole, which I really don't, we'll move on in a minute. But it's a hard thing to say, well, the NCAA did this when it wasn't an operational thing. It was simply one person doing one thing.
Right.
So, anyway.
Anyway, the whole sue Pat Forty, there's nothing to sue Pat Forty for.
No, that was exactly how that played out, exactly like how I thought it was going to play out in my head.
And the NCAA leaking, they've always leaked. They're always going to leak.
It's what they do.
It's people. Of course, people talk. It's not eyes, man. It's people. They talk. So the whole get angry at Pat Forty, if you want to get angry at him for his motivation, okay. But he did his job. A lot of the crap could have been avoided. A lot of the anger could have been avoided if in the 6 or 7 hours after that story broke, people at Ole Miss had told the truth. Which is just simply to go, yeah, it's true. What they should have said is, yes, it's true. Would you like to come see it? Because when you read it, it's not that damning. You're like, that's it?
Yeah, especially that first one.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
That's it?
Well, I mean, that was our first comment. I mean, speaking of Hoover, I was there for the SEC tournament last year when that got released, and you and I read it and went, huh, that's all.
Yeah.
So.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, those things, and then again for the 55th time, Ole Miss has punished itself for what it has admitted. It has put its own bowl ban in place. It has docked the 9 and 11 scholarships, depending on how you want to go about phrasing them. All for things that they are admitting to. The things that are up in the air, a lot of the Leo testimony, a lot of the Kobe stuff, that has not been already self-sanctioned. Those are things to come depending on how this process plays out. So just also one more kind of just thought there to remind is the things they have admitted to or the things they have punished themselves for. They have put in a bowl ban in place for things that they have believed that they did and are admitting to. So...
Yeah, I don't know. This is, I'm not in any form or fashion defending the NCAA. You know what I feel about the NCAA. I'm on record as saying the Power Five schools should break away and form essentially a semi-professional league and call it what it is and quit the amateur BS. So I don't know how much more clear I can be about that. But the NCAA has not given Ole Miss a bowl ban. Ole Miss gave Ole Miss a bowl ban. The NCAA hasn't given Ole Miss anything yet. Ole Miss has given Ole Miss sanctions. The NCAA has not found Ole Miss guilty on anything yet. Ole Miss has pled guilty to a lot of stuff. Much of the angst and stuff directed at the NCAA, while I think it's justified, if you're going to be angry at them, you have to then be angry at Ole Miss. You can't split that hair. At least to this point.
Yeah.
Maybe that changes in October and you can get mad as hell at the NCAA and Ole Miss will be validated. But as of this moment, July the 10th, that's the part of this that I struggle with a little bit. And I know I make people mad at Ole Miss when I say it. And I'm not saying Ole Miss did the wrong thing. But there's so much angst and this was a conspiracy and this was this and this was that. And gets lost in all this is that Ole Miss has pled guilty to a lot of stuff. Ole Miss is the one that administered the bowl ban. Not Mississippi State, not Scott Strickland, and not the NCAA, not Steve Robertson. Ole Miss.
Yeah. So I'm sure we'll continue. We'll see what questions come out of media days regarding any NCAA process, any NCAA situation with Ole Miss. Again, potentially starting with Sankey today, Mullen tomorrow, and then Freeze on Thursday. Before we get to Jay in a second, thoughts with the family of Eddie Crawford passed away yesterday, 82 years old, Ole Miss's last three-sport letterman. He lettered in football, baseball, and basketball from 1953 to 1956. Also played a year of track as well, or ran track, however you want to put it. But thoughts with his wife, Shirley. Again, he spent his last 11 years as a special assistant to the athletic director and over 50 years of service to Ole Miss. So Eddie Crawford yesterday, dead at the age of 82. Again, we'll have more on rebelgrove.com as the day goes on. Again, with whatever Sankey, Bill, anything that's relevant to Ole Miss and throughout this week as well. But before we do that, let's get to Jay Tate on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
The podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for air conditioning repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswald. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in our state. Michael's from the Delta, lives in Jackson, regularly visits his family in Lafayette County, so he completely understands the recreational and timberland tract in Mississippi better than anyone. Look him up on his site. It's gotland.com. got-land.com. You can read his recent testimonials. You can check out his track record. You can see the properties he has listed. But know this, the land market is very hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now's the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you, explain the process. And if he can't earn your business in that meeting, he says he doesn't deserve it. Give him a call on his cell, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. Joined now by Jay Tate here on the Oxford Exxon podcast. I always believe in full disclosure, Jay, it is Thursday night. This is going to run on Monday morning. It is Thursday night. We hit the record button at 8:48 p.m. and only after each of us poured ourselves a libation. What bourbon did you just pour?
Well, I had a few choices. And I do drink a fair amount of bourbon being from Kentucky. But in honor of this show, I decided to pour myself some Signature Craft Jim Beam.
Okay.
I would call it like Blue Label Jim Beam 86 proof. To me, it's a good solid bourbon that I just drink neat. That's generally the way I like to drink my bourbons. And I enjoy it.
I just poured a glass of Tin Cup over a big ice cube. I actually put the bourbon in first, then put the cube in. And it's good. It's a Colorado whiskey that I have recently discovered that I like quite a bit. It's great for its price point.
What is the price point?
About $29, $30.
Okay.
Not bad. Yeah. I don't like it as much as I like, say, Jefferson's Ocean. But the fact that Jefferson's Ocean is three times the price of Tin Cup, I would prefer to like Tin Cup on a more regular basis than I would like something, say, as Jefferson's Ocean.
Do you drink any legitimate proper bourbons, like say Maker's Mark? Or
yes, I do like Maker's Mark. I like it a lot. I like Four Roses.
Yes,
I have several that I like on a pretty consistent basis. Chase will when he hears this, he will laugh. Because about 3 years ago, I was not much of a bourbon/whiskey drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And he was. And he sort of turned me on to it. And I was somewhat reluctant at first. And then I dove sort of head in. And it's kind of become my favorite thing.
Yeah, me too. I like it. I like it better than drinking a lot of beer.
Oh, absolutely. I'll actually get to where I just have one beer. And then I don't really want another one. Ole Miss plays at Kentucky this season in November, and I'm already my cousin Mike Neal, who is president of the Chamber of Commerce in Tulsa. He has a daughter who went to Ole Miss, and now he has a daughter who is at the University of Kentucky. So he's going to be at the game, and we've already talked about doing the bourbon tour, the whiskey tour. Maybe on that Thursday or Friday before the game, so I'm really kind of excited about that.
Dang, I went to high school in Tulsa, and I went to University of Kentucky. It's kind of weird.
It's a small world, isn't it, Jay?
It really is, man. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
SEC Media Days, this will be like your 30th SEC Media Days or something like that. Do you like it? Do you hate it? What is it about it that you like? What is it about it that you hate?
There was a time, Neil, when I used to go, let's say in the 90s, and I really, really enjoyed it. I looked forward to it every year because I had a lot of young friends that went, and it was just a chance to see the guys that covered the other beats, you know, like the LSU beat guys that I knew I wouldn't see them very often. But now, in the last 10 years or so, it's just gotten so ridiculous. From a journalistic perspective, it's just a joke. It's like a circus. And
it's totally a joke.
It is a joke. And a lot of the people that I knew when I was getting into the business, who are my friends, they're out of the business. And you know what I'm talking about. I mean, the newspaper people have fled.
Yeah.
And I go there and I feel like I know, you know, 10% of the people, the reporters. It used to be like 70. And it just kind of makes me sad about, you know, what it used to be like and what it is now. And I'm not trying to be all high and mighty, like, it's not up to my standard any longer. But I mean, it really is stupid when you're asking kids about boxers and briefs and silly stuff like that. It just, I mean, the time that Clay Travis, and I know you like Clay Travis, but he was trying to get all going with Tebow. It's just, nah.
Yeah, the question about Tebow's virginity was completely out of bounds. It was totally wrong.
It's just grandstanding.
It was. It wasn't fair to the kid because I don't know what Tebow's. I don't know what his sexuality is or isn't. It's none of my business. He seems like a decent enough guy, and at the time he was a college kid, and that was wrong.
Yeah, it was just grandstanding. It's what you have to do. You try to stick out. Those national guys try to stick out, and that's the way they do it. You know, for me, when I go to the spring meetings, it's usually right around Memorial Day.
That's what I was getting ready to ask you about, so go ahead.
Yeah, that's what Media Days used to be like, where I still know 70% of the reporters there at that event, and I have a chance to talk to coaches and ask them proper questions instead of boxers or briefs or, you know, do you like how your wife makes cookies and silly stuff like that? I can talk football and strategy, and they're calm and relaxed, and they're on a trip to the beach, basically. You know, at Media Days, they know what's coming, and they're uptight, and it's just not great. For fans, it's good, maybe. You get to watch them on TV and listen to what all the other coaches are saying, but for a reporter, I think it stinks, and I try to get in and out as quickly as I can.
Yeah, you're just going on Thursday, because the team you cover, Auburn, and the team I cover, Ole Miss, they both go the same day on Thursday. I'm going for the whole week for two reasons. One, because Carson starts UAB soccer camp on this morning, as people hear this, on Monday morning, and also because it's a place to go get a lot of interviews for this here podcast.
Yes, sir.
Otherwise, I don't know that I would go until Thursday. And frankly, from a beat writer standpoint, from the Rivals.com part of my job, the only really worthwhile part of the job will be on Thursday morning, assuming that it's like any other year, we'll get 15, 20 minutes with Hugh Freeze before he goes into the main room and starts his media circus thingy. Kind of the way you guys will probably get that with Gus Malzahn. And that'll be the only, from a true meaningful, I can turn this into something that's worthwhile to my subscribers. That's the only 20 minutes that'll be worth a damn.
Yeah. Well, it's a good opportunity to talk to coaches, so that'll be good for you. And we all do a great show. I listen to it occasionally, and consider I'm not an Ole Miss guy. I love what you and Chase do.
So I appreciate that. So at spring meetings, because when I was in Mobile working for the Press Register back in the old print ink stained days of my career, there was not a huge turnout, and you could really go get good stuff. And I went every year. I haven't been since. That's been basically a decade. Is it? It looks like it's more organized from a media standpoint now. I know our listeners are like, I don't give a damn, but I do, and it's my show right now. From a media standpoint, is it still pretty worthwhile?
Going to Sandessen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. They talk about real situations down there. I mean, there's always like three or four, you know, proper, I guess, segments, you know, ideas that are going through the league. You know, should we accentuate new areas? There's always some recruiting hubbub. So you can get some real ideas about where these coaches stand and who's kind of a consensus builder and who's kind of a maverick. And I like being able to talk to these coaches, man. I can get a feel for what their personality is. I mean, Media Days, dude, they're just putting on their little sheen and they're just saying what they got to say. I think journalistically, it generally has almost no value. But, I mean, it's cool. It's good for the fans to be able to see that stuff. Hey, before I forget, I want to tell you a little story about Courtney before we're finished, all right? Okay. We're going to keep going on football.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's talk about Courtney. I'd rather do that right now.
Courtney's my wife. I have been either dating or married to Courtney since 92. But we were going through some old stuff because her dad died in February or March, and we're cleaning out the house. We're going to sell it, blah, blah, blah. And I came across a picture of Courtney that I had never seen before when she was in high school, okay? She was a senior. This is going into her senior year.
Okay.
And the picture, and I thought, my God, she's smoking hot. Is that weird or not? Like,
no, that's not weird.
I'm looking at a picture of a 17-year-old girl, and I'm like, wow, she's really hot. I would try to do what I can to get it in here. Same time, I know this girl, and I've spent the last, whatever, 30 years with her, 25 years. So I don't know. Is that creepy or not? I actually have the picture on my desk now because, I don't know, man. It kind of gets me excited.
No, it's not creepy at all. It's the same. The girl that you're married to is the same girl that's in the picture. It's not.
I know. That's fair, right?
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm sure.
She's beautiful now. I'm just saying.
Told Courtney that, I'm sure she'd be excited about it.
Well, she knows it's on the desk. I mean,
yeah. She's not complaining about it.
No.
It's not like you're pulling up pictures of other girls or models or something. You're looking at the same girl.
Yeah. But it feels creepy because she's 17.
You guys, I've always thought you and Courtney had like a, I don't know, kind of a traditional love story. I mean, y'all been together forever and you're like head over heels. You always have been.
Yeah. Untraditional as far as how we got together because she injured a player on the field and she got suspended. And so I wrote about it and that's how I met her.
You liked that, didn't you? She was kind of mean at the time.
Injured another player. The girl deserved it, I'm sure. She still has the stick.
Every time I hear that story, I laugh. I'm sorry. It's just
the Rebel Grove users have to say about me kind of being excited by a 17-year-old in a picture. I don't know. It's weird.
But it's a 17-year-old who you since married and you had a child with, and you've been, how long have you all been married?
Since 97, so coming up on 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great. We get along really well, so I'm very fortunate in that situation.
I'm glad. How's your daughter?
She's 15, and she's kind of a wench. She's on the phone a lot.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the struggle.
I totally am. I have a 16-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old daughter, and every once in a while, it's kind of like you. I took Caroline, our 14-year-old, I took her to the airport because she flew to Houston to spend the week with her cousins. She's there now. Or she was that. She's, as you hear this, she won't be there now. But she spent a week in Houston, and so we're going to the airport. We left about, I don't know, 4:15 in the morning to drive to Memphis, and we had this really nice visit. I really enjoyed it, and it was so funny because I told her we got to the airport, and I said, Caroline, that's like the longest you and I've talked in a long time. That was really fun. And you could kind of hear in her voice like, yeah, it was good, but it's not going to happen again for a while. And, you know, it was kind of nice. I enjoyed it. And Campbell's 16, and so she's driving now. And really the extent of the relationship now, Jay, is more kind of a text of, hey, I'm going up to the square, or I'm going over to my friend Caitlin's house, or and it'll be a text, you know, 10 minutes later says, made it. And it's really, there's not a lot of give and take, but it's okay. You get it. I mean, you're glad that your kids are, what's the word I'm looking for? You're glad that they're kind of experiencing some independence and they're building their own lives outside of you. Yet at the same time, you know that that just means they're getting closer and closer to the day that they just leave you.
Yeah.
And so I don't really, there's like a juxtaposition there that's, In one part you're sad, and in one part you're really proud, and I don't know.
Just making it through one day at a time, bro. It's tough because I can feel it kind of slipping away already. That she's kind of becoming. I mean, your daughter's driving, but and so it gives her a whole new level that my daughter doesn't have. But
oh, just wait!
I can feel it coming.
Yeah, when they get the license and they get behind the wheel, and they get that level of independence, you just don't exist in the way that you used to.
Yeah, and we won't get it back until they're, I mean, ideally, until they're like 25 or older.
Yeah.
In so, best case.
So Carson's 10, and so he's still a ways away from that, and I'm still like a big deal in his life. And so I catch myself kind of clinging to that a little bit.
We just have the one, so.
Yeah.
I get my one shot.
You get, that's it. Yeah, so you have to maximize. All right.
We went college trips the other day.
Where did you go?
Took her to, she visited Duke, North Carolina, Clemson, and Wake Forest, and Appalachian State, just kind of for fun.
What'd you think?
Dude, those places blew me away with their football stuff, dude. I saw, I was able to kind of tour from the outside Clemson's new football-only facility. My God, man. It's really something.
They're pretty serious about their football at Clemson.
Well, I didn't know that they built that. It's like a football-only compound where they keep everything that has to do with football. And outside, they've got, like, outside meeting rooms, and they've got areas for, like, position-by-position cookouts. Yes, they're called cookouts, not barbecues. And they had, like, a beach volleyball court. I mean, dude, it was plush. So way over what Auburn's got.
Let me ask this, because I've always heard Clemson is Auburn with a lake. I've never been to Clemson. Is it Auburn with a lake?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the lake at the time that I was there, but it's hilly where Auburn is flat, but it has a similar aesthetic. Yeah, I think that's fair. I'll tell you one thing that's weird about Clemson is they have a graveyard right next to the stadium. And I don't mean in the general vicinity. I mean right next to it. It's kind of creepy, but it's also kind of cool. I don't know.
Where they bury people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if they're burying people there currently, you know, in the last year or so, but there are a bunch of people buried there. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if you meant like where they bury, you know, some teams when they win a game, they'll take some grass or whatever and they'll bury it.
Nah, I'm talking about real people, bro. It's kind of creepy, but kind of cool too. I was most impressed by Duke, even though I'm a Kentucky graduate and I hate Duke. That's a really pretty place. So, see what happens on that.
Do you still hate Christian Laettner?
Absolutely. If I saw him right now, I'd kick him in the balls. In 95, my wife and I drove from Lexington to Orlando because the Timberwolves were playing the Magic. We drove there just to cuss out Christian Laettner. And she did.
Did he ever pay attention to it?
Yeah, absolutely. She said a bunch of stuff bad. I don't want to repeat it because it makes her look bad, but she said a lot of stuff. She was sober, too. And he said, I must be a Kentucky fan. And she just started up even more. This is before we got married, so I knew she was the one for sure at that point. I like a girl that does that.
You like a girl who cusses the who was with the Hawks at the time or the Magic?
T-Wolves,
okay.
Yeah, so she just waited for him coming out and just really let him have it. I liked it.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm. So I got this picture of this girl right here. Yeah, damn.
So where's she going to go to school, do you know?
No, it's still early. We're still working on it.
Yeah.
But she's doing a very tough academic school, and she's doing very well there. So I'm thinking she's going to have a chance to be at some of those bigger schools. And you know, we'll take a look at Auburn and Alabama, too. I mean, financially, that might make more sense. But just, you know, just taking a look. We got friends in North Carolina, so my thought was if she wanted to leave home, that'd be a good place to go because she could have some friends and family nearby that could help. Yeah, such a neat rose. That's all I'm saying.
Let's take a break in the interview to tell you about MasterCuts and their new partnership with Spray South to provide customers a new service everybody's been asking for, starting immediately skeeter beaters ready to eliminate those pesky mosquitoes that prevent you from enjoying your back porch every afternoon and the 28 diseases that they carry. Skeeter beaters vows to provide the same great customer service its parent companies are built upon. The product's designed to last 3 to 5 weeks depending on the weather. They offer single application pricing starting at $60 as well as seasonal packages. They serve all of North Mississippi, so if you're in Grenada, Olive Branch, Tupelo, Amory, or anywhere else, give Skeeter Beaters a call, 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chasa Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. This time of the year, snapper and cobia are the most popular trips to take. The snapper season in Mississippi waters runs through Labor Day 2017. Another popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John at 228-348-7817. The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South, owned and operated by Kyle and Jordan Thornton. 7 South Tailgating is equipped with the largest staff in the Grove that can service most any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC only and full season packages, rental packages, or they can set up your gear wherever you want it set up, on the Grove, the Circle, or on the outskirts of campus. 7 South typically sells out for every game, so visit their site today to secure your spot. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com, and you can reach them by cell at 662-321-1682. All right, let's talk some media days before people get pissed off. Auburn goes Thursday. By the time Auburn goes, Dan Mullen will have already gone. Hugh Freeze goes that same day. Kind of a good spot for Gus Malzahn. Two things. One, do you think on Monday when Greg Sankey speaks to the media that he will be asked questions about this immunity interview thing, whether it's a good idea? And then when Gus Malzahn goes, when he's asked about Austin Golson, if he's asked about Austin Golson and immunity interviews, what do you think he'll say?
Man, I don't know that much about these immunity interviews. I'm guessing it's about you can talk to NCAA people about Ole Miss without worrying about any kind of repercussions. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the player can talk about what happened in his recruiting process without worrying about it affecting his eligibility. The schools that might be affected are not granted the immunity.
Okay, well, I've spoken to Austin about this off the record, some, because he's from Prattville, and that's basically where I'm from. Yeah, I'm in Montgomery.
Yeah.
That's like the next town up. And I've never heard anything that would suggest, and I probably wouldn't tell you, even if I knew, I wouldn't even mention it. I don't think he was paid by Ole Miss. I never got that feeling. And I feel like I've had kids tell me that before, not about Ole Miss, but other schools.
Sure.
You know, I chose this school because you know why and stuff like that. But Austin's never indicated anything like that to me about Ole Miss. I think he just wanted to get away from home, and he was mad that Auburn hadn't offered him. And Auburn offered him late. But that he was already mad, and it was just kind of an odd situation. I think he should have been at Auburn all along, but Auburn didn't offer him. Ole Miss did, and offered him a chance to play, and he went and played. And I don't think he was that great coming out of high school. I mean, it's not like he was a surefire prospect that any coaching staff would have been like, yeah, let's get a bunch of money to get Austin Golson. I don't think he was that kind of player anyway. So as far as immunity goes for him, I don't think that's going to go anywhere. I mean, they'll offer him immunity, and he'll probably just say, I'll just tell you whatever. I don't care. But I've never gotten the feeling that anything, you know, anything shady went on there.
Yeah, and all that came out of his immunity interview was a level 3, nothing. I mean, you know, and I don't. Everything I heard was that he really kind of went into it intending to sort of make sure the NCAA guys knew that he was kind of clearing them, if you will. That nothing really happened. It's no secret around here that he, on his visit, he kind of took a shine to the girl who was his sort of host, and he came back 2 weeks later because he wanted to see her again, which I completely get.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I understand. I mean, you were talking about the picture of your wife when she was 17. I've seen pictures of girls when they were 19 or 20. And
there's some pretty girls at Ole Miss.
I get it. I mean, I totally understand the sentiment there. But I don't think there was a whole lot out of it, and I don't think Gus Malzahn and I don't think Gus Malzahn's out to, quote, get Hugh Freeze. I'm not sure that Dan Mullen can say the same thing. I think
I will guarantee you Gus Malzahn is not out to get Hugh Freeze.
What do you think that relationship is, really? I mean, I know Gus is really buttoned up, and he's going to be one of the more of the 14 coaches that go at SEC Media Days. He might be the most buttoned up coach that's there. They're bringing a kicker and an offensive lineman and a defensive back. They're not bringing Jared Stidham, who's the one guy that I would like to talk to. He's kind of you know what I mean. I mean, Gus is it's pretty closed up. It's in a very specific lane. But I don't think Gus is out to get anybody. I don't think that's his MO.
You know, I'm not sure about that, but I can guarantee it's not Hugh Freeze. Well, we've talked on your show a few times and on my show once or twice about how we think that relationship's overrated because once upon a time they were talking about each other like they were brothers, which is probably not true. That's romanticizing a little bit. But I do think Gus is kind of a binary dude. He either likes you or doesn't. There's no shades of gray really with him. And he likes you. So he's not going to do anything to Hugh. And I can't imagine a situation where if there was something going on in the recruiting trail that Auburn saw that Ole Miss wasn't doing right, that Auburn would turn them in. I cannot imagine a situation where that would happen. I just can't see it. I think Gus would call Hugh and be like, we're aware of this going on. You need to knock that off. I think that's what would happen. I just don't think Gus would do anything like that to Ole Miss. That's the way it is with a lot of schools. I think you kind of work some things out. The coaches talk.
What's Malzahn's relationship with Saban?
Just average. I'm just a zero. I think Gus is all right with him. I don't think they don't have cross words, but they're different kinds of dudes doing a different kind of job with different approaches.
All right.
I think Gus took it personally when Saban was trying to legislate rules to mess with his offense. I think that bothered him.
All right. I had Ryan Brown, WJOX, on the show, I guess, Wednesday or Thursday of last week.
He's good.
He's good. Ryan's a great dude.
Absolutely.
He said, and you tell me if you agree, that if Jared Stidham is, quote, a great quarterback, end quote, Auburn's a national title contender. He said if Jared Stidham's a good quarterback, Auburn is an SEC contender. He said if Jared Stidham is not the quarterback that people believe Jared Stidham should be, that it potentially could get kind of ugly on the plains, that everything else is sort of there, but that it's all about quarterback play, and that it an inordinate amount of the outcome of Auburn's season comes down to Stidham. I know it's not exactly a hot take to say, hey, quarterback play matters. I mean, I get that. But you understand, there's a difference between saying, hey, you know, this guy's a good quarterback, and if he plays well, they have a chance to be good. There's a difference between saying that and saying that if this guy's a great quarterback, everything else is in place and they'd be a title contender. Do you buy that?
I think it's an interesting idea, and I think there's some truth in that, but I don't think it's quite that simple. I mean, I know he's kind of simplifying it for effect, but
sure.
I think Auburn's got some other issues that I'd like to see addressed before I were to say that they were a national title contender, because I don't like their defensive line a whole lot right now, beyond the first team guys. I like the first team guys, but depth on the defensive line, and if one of those good guys gets hurt, and I think they're in trouble on the defensive line. And I don't love the offensive line yet. I don't know exactly. They've got some holes that I don't have answers for. You know, I don't know who they're going to play, like, for instance, at left tackle. The kid they're taking to SEC Media Days is Braden Smith. I think he's a great guard. He's a solid tackle. They're saying they're going to play him at right tackle. I don't know. I mean, would you take your best lineman and then put him in a position where he's just kind of okay? Yeah, there's just a lot of things like that. But I understand where he's coming from on Stidham. There's no doubt that he's going to take this offense a long way if he plays well. It's just, here's the thing. They're going to a new paradigm, I guess you could say, from passing. They're going to RPO, and it's something that Malzahn hated before. I mean, like, disavowed. And now they have a guy named Chip Lindsey coming in who's installing an RPO passing attack. So it's kind of new, and it's made for Stidham. I think it accentuates his strengths, which is his accuracy inside of about 20 yards. And he can throw it deep, too, and I think he's just deadly inside of 20 yards. So it all makes sense in theory, but I just need to see it in practice. I need to see, first of all, that the offense works and that they can get the ball to the right people. And second of all, I need to see Gus Malzahn willing to back away and let somebody else call some plays, because he's been calling a whole lot of plays lately, and a lot of them have been stinky.
Is he going to do it? It's a hard thing for coaches to do. Like Hugh Freeze has gone out and hired Phil Longo as his offensive coordinator, and people think this is an insult at Freeze when I say it, and I don't mean it as an insult at Freeze at all, but I think it's so hard for a guy like Freeze, who deep down in his heart of hearts, the one thing he loves the most about football, if he's completely honest, besides the $5 million a year, the one thing he loves the most is calling plays. And
yeah,
and he has to give that up? He has to hand that to somebody and stand on the sideline and listen to plays be called and bite his tongue and let the play get called and it succeeds or it fails, and deep down he's surrendering control of his offense. Man, I think that's hard to do. I think that's really hard for a type A personality, and almost every single head coach has a type A personality. It's so hard for those guys to do that.
Yep, it is. It'll be a challenge for Malzahn to do the same thing.
And I'll be honest, Jay, I don't think either one of them can do it. I don't think Gus Malzahn can surrender his offense, and I don't think Hugh Freeze can surrender his offense. It's why I think when they go out and say, we're going to do this, I go, man, it's not going to work.
Well, we know what happens when Malzahn's calling plays. They run all the time up the middle, and they get stuffed, and their offense stinks. Or I shouldn't say stinks. It's just underachieves. So he's got to look at these numbers and say, I think this guy can do better. And it's one of his proteges. I mean, the guy he's brought in is not just some yahoo from wherever. It's a guy that worked for Malzahn a number of years ago. And, you know, he kind of learned from Malzahn. He's one of his disciples for sure. So
does he have the personal discipline to do it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the coordinator does.
I know that. Discuss.
Well, before, I didn't feel that way.
Because, you know, at some point they're going to have a couple possessions where they suck and it doesn't work. And Malzahn's going to think to himself, well, I would have done this and it would have worked. Does he have the internal discipline to say, hey, everybody has a couple of bad series. We're going to keep rolling.
We're going to find out. If I had to guess, no, I don't think he can do it. But we're going to find out.
See, I'm in the same boat with Freeze. And when I say that to people, they go, oh, you just hate Freeze. I'm like, I don't hate Freeze at all. I like you, Freeze. I just know that's the part of football, the game itself, when the game kicks off and they have the headset on and they're coaching the game itself. The part of football that they love the most is calling plays.
Yep. It's tough to give it up.
Yeah, and you give it up and you hand it to somebody and you watch them succeed some, but when they fail, when they succeed, it's like, that's easy. It's easy to go, I'm the head coach. I hired this guy. Look at us. We're rolling, baby. And then when they, you know what I mean? When they suck for a couple possessions, you're like, man, I can't believe you made that call. I would have done this and it would have worked. I'm going to take this. I'm going to call this one play. And then it never works. It's so hard. It's why, you know, I mean, the Steve Spurrier style of coaching it's kind of hard to pull off because it's you're the head guy, and you in one level you want to be the CEO, and then the other level what you really love the most is being the offensive coordinator.
Let's take one more quick break to tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's flow down option. This allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact him 662-234-2704 or JLowe, that's LOWE, at communitymtg.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. Why does that matter? Well, when you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. Oxford University Bank gives you all the comfort of home and all of the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, but with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield and three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. Oxford University Bank is FDIC insured. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I know. That's how he made his money. I mean, Malzahn made all these millions by calling plays. So now you're telling me he's going to back away and not call plays. I mean, the one thing is, I think he's being compelled to back away a little bit. I think some people are telling him he needs to, and he's going to.
So how good is Stidham?
He's good. He's really good. He's a professional football player. He approaches the game in a way that I haven't seen before myself. Just as far as he goes to work every day, like every single day, even when they're not practicing, like this time of year. Well, he's on vacation this week, but like 2 weeks ago, I mean, he gets up at like 6 a.m. and he goes to the complex and he puts in a full day, if not more, looking at tape, going through voluntary workouts, throwing the ball around. Like, he's here for one reason, and that reason is to be good at football and have a big year and make some money, you know? So he's really approaching this like a professional job, and I think he's a good football player. I think he's going to play in the NFL. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say they're going to be title contenders, as Ryan was kind of saying himself, but because I got other questions. But I think Stidham's going to be really good, and I think he's going to be a revelation for them. I really do.
Can they beat Alabama?
Yeah, they can beat Alabama. Here's the thing about Auburn. When they've got Malzahn, they beat Alabama for 3 or 4 years. And they're due. 13 was the last win, although that was kind of fluky, wasn't it? Although Auburn people would say it wasn't.
It was pretty
a little bit orchestrated, but,
pretty fluky. It wasn't, yeah, well, it wasn't as fluky as the Georgia win that year. The Georgia win was more fluky than the Alabama win.
Absolutely.
How much?
And in 14, do they put up 650 yards on him? So, you know, they don't exactly get crushed all the time.
How much pressure is there on Malzahn to win those games? I mean, I covered Auburn for 6 years. I worked in that state for a decade. I know how big the Georgia game is, the Alabama game is. It's those are the games that that Auburn has struggled with the last half decade or so. I mean, how much pressure is there on Malzahn to win those games?
It's a ton, man. I mean, he's lost all six in a row to Georgia and Alabama. He's 0 for his last six against them, and that's just not good enough. And he knows that. But here's the thing. I mean, I think he would be nervous about that. I think it would affect him mentally, except he's going in knowing I've got the weapons I need right now. I've got Stidham. I've got Cam Petway. I've got a bunch of other dudes that don't matter to the point of this show that I trust in and I think are going to be really good players this year. He's going in feeling like he's got it. So he's probably not worried right now. But he needs to beat Georgia. He needs to beat one of them no matter what. I think if he loses both, I think he's going to get fired.
Do you really?
I do. I mean, I just don't see how an Auburn coach can go 0-8 against those two in a four-year period and be okay.
I asked this as devil's advocate. If he goes 10-2 and those are the two, he gets fired?
I don't know about that, but I doubt that would happen. Although, if he did go 10-2 and lost those two, there'd be people that would want him out.
Yeah, but not smart people.
And at that point, they probably would have been 10-0, and they're going to finish 10-2 with two losses, stinkers at the end. It's going to be ugly. It'd be close. I don't think he's a very popular guy here.
I've asked you this before, that job. What's that job? Is it a top 15 job, top 10, top 20, top 5? What is that job?
Yeah, I think it's in the 15 to 10 range. I mean, they don't have elite money, but they have a lot of money. And they have their facilities are not elite at all, but they're good. And there's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of support. It's not put together as well as Alabama's, but it's good. And I think a smart, shrewd coach who can recruit well and find those diamonds in the rough with a good system can win here consistently. And Auburn's been pretty good with Malzahn. They're just not quite there because they keep losing these games to Georgia and Alabama. That's the difference.
So if I told you as the football gods, if I told you that the football gods came down and said, hey, Jay, Alabama does not win the SEC West this year. Who wins it? Is it Auburn?
Yeah, I'd think Auburn at that point.
If someone came down and said it's not Alabama and it's not Auburn, who is it?
Oh, gosh. Who's next? It's not going to be A&M.
LSU? Arkansas?
Probably Arkansas. At least they have some quarterback. At least they have some quarterback there.
Why do you think he's not had more success than he's had? Brett Bielema at Arkansas?
Gets in his own way. He's got his own problems, big games. I mean, he got absolutely annihilated by Auburn last year. There's no need for that. That was a big game for him. It was a big game for Auburn, too, but he lost that one like 45-7 or something like that.
So you think he overthinks it?
Yeah, I do. And I like Bielema a lot. He's probably my favorite coach in the league, man. I like him.
He's easily my favorite coach in the league. I mean, I catch myself cheering for him, and I catch myself going, hey, you don't need to be this way. I don't know what it is I like about him. He's just kind of a big guy, and he's funny, and he doesn't seem to make football more than football is. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, some people treat football like it's, the path to world peace, the cure for cancer. It's like, no, man, it's almost a sport. It's a game. Yeah. Stop.
I think Bielema just outthinks himself sometimes. Yeah. He keeps thinking about, well, this worked at Wisconsin, or I did this, you know, with Russell Wilson. Yeah, well, he's really good. And you don't have him anymore. I think he gets in his own way. Malzahn gets in his own way, too.
How so?
Because he gets into these weird thought problems. Dude, I don't know how much Auburn football you watch, but he was actually messing around with a wing tee last year. Like, it's this weird formation where, like, the fullback takes the snap and spins around in a pirouette and starts running. I mean, they ran, like, 15 plays like that last year. That's what I'm talking about. Because he woke up in a dream in May or something and said, we're going to run some wing tee. Let's do it. You know, and it doesn't make any sense. And they go out against Clemson and they get flattened by it. They look like idiots. And he keeps doing it.
They should have beaten Clemson last year.
They should have beaten Clemson last year. Yeah.
I mean, on the list of games that got away for a team,
it's number one.
Auburn versus Clemson's way up there.
It was a 50-50 game. I really believe that.
Yeah.
It was that
close. Actually, I think it was more than that. I think it was a 60-40 game. Auburn should have won.
I can't blame it on the silly wing T stuff because it was like five or six snaps. But that's five or six snaps wasted, bro. And I think in a game like that, you need them all.
They open at Clemson this year, right?
No, it's a second game.
Second game.
It's Georgia Southern. And then they're at Clemson on September 9th, which is going to be a showdown.
That is a big game.
It is, man. It's huge because Auburn's going to – they're going to – well, Georgia Southern's not going to be easy. They've been good lately. But if they go into that 1-0 and Stidham is ready to roll, they're going to unveil some stuff at Clemson, and they're going to treat that like it's going to be a magnum opus. Yeah. I don't know – you know, I don't know that much about Clemson, what they can do without Deshaun Watson. But I would imagine they're going to have dudes back, and they're going to be hungry. So I'm really looking forward to that game.
I'd hate to be the guy that replaces Deshaun Watson, though.
Eesh.
That dude was a gamer, man.
I mean, he was so popular. I mean, Clemson people, he's going to be like Tebow to them.
But in back-to-back national championship games, one they lost and one they won, he said, give me the ball, I'm going to go get it done, and he did.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, I don't know what kind of NFL player he'll be. I think he'll be a pretty good NFL player, but from a college-level standpoint, that guy was – it's hard to surpass how good he was at the college level.
He's a player, man, and Auburn tried really hard to get him. I mean, Malzahn wanted that kid starting his sophomore year in high school and tried everything he could possibly do. Even got him on campus with a secret visit and just couldn't get it done, man. That kid wanted to go to Clemson. It worked out for him, too. Everything that Dabo told him was going to happen, which at the time I thought was crazy talk. So, I mean, come on, it's Clemson.
Yeah.
Ain't true. And you got to give Dabo credit for that.
You do. I hope Dabo is smart enough to stay where he is and not be the guy that tries to replace Nick Saban.
I don't want that job. If it's two guys down the road after Saban, that's fine. But the guy who follows Saban's going to he's going to suck.
Yeah. I don't mind being the guy who replaces the guy who replaced Saban. Or yeah. The guy who replaced the guy who replaced the guy who replaced Saban, but I do not want to be the guy who replaces Saban.
Yeah, they need their own Zook or DeBose or whatever.
It can't go well. Last thing, Les Miles is gone. I always enjoyed the Les Miles part of SEC Media Days. Steve Spurrier's gone. I've always enjoyed that part of SEC Media Days. Is there a coach that you kind of look forward to hearing?
Well, there's a few. I mean, like Derek Mason, nobody really cares what Vanderbilt's doing, but he's a very blunt dude. So he's apt to say some stuff that wouldn't necessarily be funny, but would be interesting because I don't think he cares. I mean, he's just kind of saying what he wants. And he feels like he's a made man already. Like he thinks he's done enough in football where he doesn't have to be, you know, real nice and demure. He just speaks from the heart, man.
He said that the league doesn't cheat, Jay. That's utter,
I know.
It's utter crap.
I know.
Does he believe that, or was it? What was that?
I was there when he said it. I don't think he was being ironic. I just think that's what he sees.
That's.
Awesome. I don't know what to tell you, man.
I don't either. Because that's insane.
You know, Butch Jones, nah.
No, he's bad.
Bielik's funny. Saban is not funny. Gus is boring. Freeze is kind of boring. Mullen thinks he's funny, but he's not. Orgeron can be interesting. I'd be interested to see what he has to say because he actually is a pretty funny dude one on one. But in a group setting, I don't know what he's like.
Whoa.
Mark Stoops is boring. Muschamp is a great guy. He's so funny. One of my favorites, but he's not great at a podium.
Yeah. He's gotten better, though.
McElwain's pretty good. Although, I don't know.
Kirby Smart's bad at the podium.
He's bad. God, he's bad. And I was going to tell you, at Sandestin, you can really get a feel for how the beat writers interact with these coaches. And you can kind of, you know, a guy like McElwain, he's joking around with the beat writers, and he knows them by name, and he's kind of going back and forth. And Bielema does some of that, too. But, man, Kirby, he wants to fight with everybody. Like, nobody, he doesn't get along with anybody on his beat. He views every reporter as a problem. And, I mean, even Saban doesn't do that. So I don't know where Kirby got this idea, but.
You know what's funny is when Ole Miss was in the process of firing Houston Nutt for the better part of 3 months, I started talking to people that their names came up, and Kirby Smart was one of the names that came up a lot. And I talked to Kirby Smart's dad a couple of times, and Kirby Smart's dad was one of the nicest, most personable people I've ever spoken to.
I'm kidding.
Oh, Jay could not have been nicer. I mean, it was great. And I talked to him for half an hour, two or three times. And it was fantastic. Told me all these stories about his son and stuff. He was clearly proud of his son. And
it's like 5 years ago?
Yeah, it's 2011.
All right.
I mean, you know, Kirby was the defensive coordinator at Alabama, and his dad couldn't have been more proud of his son and all that stuff. It was, you know, typical stuff, but he was great. And you know, obviously, you know, Ole Miss, it was a preordained deal. They were going to hire Hugh Freeze, and Kirby wasn't really a candidate. But the point was, is that I was sort of surprised that he was this almost kind of aggressive kind of guy with media, with people. Now that he got at Georgia, it didn't fit the guy that was described to me by all of his friends.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know Will pretty well, just having covered him three separate times, and you know, he loves Kirby. They're like BFF, and he just assures me, he's like, man, Kirby's a great guy. I'm like, Will, I don't see it, man. I don't see it at all. And he's like, well, you just don't know him. And I'm like, well, yeah, I know that, but I don't know why he's going to be so angry.
Yeah.
And Will isn't that way either.
No, Will's funny.
I found out recently, I don't know if you guys saw this, but maybe 2 or 3 months ago, he got really... He felt like he had to take a stand against something the state had written about a couple of his players that had been suspended, and the state reported that they had done something that it turned out they hadn't done. But it wasn't the state's fault. It was the police's fault, and they had accused them of something, and they found out they hadn't done it, that kind of a thing. So when it was time to clear their names, the state did that, but Will was still mad. And he had to get on camera, and he had to raise hell about it. But see, here's the difference between Will and Kirby. Will tells Josh Kendall, who covers USC for the state, I'm going to have to do this thing. Just, you know, let me do it. And then he goes out there and he says what he's got to say, but he tells Josh beforehand, like, I got to do this.
Yeah.
Whereas Kirby would just go out there and slam the paper and walk off and never say a word. You got to communicate a little bit. Just help us a little bit, man.
Yeah, you have to acknowledge that, hey, the paper did this and I'm pissed about it, but the beat writer didn't necessarily do it.
Right. I'm not mad at you, and I don't want you to think that I'm mad at you, but I'm going to do this anyway.
Yeah, we're cool, but I'm about to take a shot at your employer.
Yeah.
Because I have to.
He went out there, and he's like, it's basically the National Enquirer now. I'll never subscribe to that rag ever again. It was funny, but anyway.
Josh could get him on the phone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the way it used to be. When I started getting into sports writing in the early 90s, that's what it was like. You could talk to people. I mean, I could talk to Patino. Wouldn't call him, but I could talk to him. And Tubby Smith and stuff like that when I was in Kentucky. But, man, there's no way that can happen now. I can't even talk to the mouse on.
You can talk to Pearl, though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, Pearl's different, but...
That's what I'm talking about. People are like, you're an apologist for Andy Kennedy. And I'm like, I'm not an apologist. I just like the guy.
Yeah, I like Andy, too. He's one of my favorite coaches anywhere.
Oh, he's one of the best people in the world to deal with because he's a straight-up guy.
Yeah, he is.
Free.
He's so funny at spring meetings. I mean... There's just, like, not 1 ounce of conceit in that guy. Like, he's just rolling around in his T-shirt and shorts, just having the time of his life, man. Like, he's not stuffy. He's not – I love Andy. He's great.
He gets it. I mean, as it pertains to media and media relations, he understands that the media is not the reason that he wins or loses a game.
And he's good with reporters, too, I want to say. I mean, he's – you know, he'll take time to talk to you and stuff, and you can tell he knows certain people, and, you know, I like him. Good guy.
Hugh's a good guy. I hope for Hugh's sake that he gets past this NCAA thing. And whatever's on the other side of it, I think it's got to be. It's got to feel like clean air. Like, it always feels like, you know, you're in an airplane and you're in turbulence and you're nervous and the plane's jumping a little bit and you just don't feel right. When you get to the other side, it's like, whew. I kind of hope he gets to that place and just exhales and learns a little bit from it. And I don't, this deal has, it's been what, 4.5 years? I mean, it's been the majority of his tenure at Ole Miss has been this NCAA thing. It's got to be, no matter how how bad it is or how not bad it is. It's got to be something he's looking forward to getting to the other side of.
If he didn't do anything wrong, I hope that he does get into some smooth air. But if he did something wrong, dude, you got to pay the price.
Yeah, well. Guests join the Oxford Exxon podcast via the Rebel Locker Room hotline. The Rebel Locker Room is on West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear. All the colors, all the styles, everything you need to get ready for the coming football season and more is right there at the Rebel Locker Room. Ole Miss football season tickets, Ole Miss men's basketball season tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. Now back to the show.
I think they did some things wrong. I don't know that they did as many things wrong as they're accused of. It's a funny deal. It's on one hand, the people at Ole Miss will do the, hey, nothing happened here. And it's like, that's not true. And on the other hand, it's the outside people are like, oh, they cheated like mad. And that's not true either.
I doubt that's true.
Yeah, it's, the truth is, as it always is, Jay, you know this, the truth is in the middle. And I don't know. I hope for Freeze's sake and for Ole Miss's sake that they're able to find the middle. I'm a little skeptical about the NCAA's ability to back off some, because I frankly believe that had the NCAA stopped with the first NOA, which would have resulted in, some coaches maybe getting reprimanded and 12 to 13 scholarships or whatnot, I actually think they would have kind of gotten it right. I think they've overreached on the second NOA, and I don't know where it's going to go. I don't feel sorry for Freeze, because it's difficult for me to feel sorry for someone that makes $5 million a year. But and everything that the NCAA is accusing them of is not wrong, but enough of it's wrong that it doesn't feel right. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I get it. So who turned them in for that? Do we know?
Yeah, Mississippi State.
Mississippi State turned them in, okay.
Which is why on Tuesday, Dan Mullen's going to go in front of the SEC media, and people are going to ask him these questions, and I'm fascinated to see his answers.
Yeah, I'm not a Mullen guy. He thinks he's really funny. He thinks he's really, really shrewd, and I don't think he is. And Auburn people hate him, because he's the one that, so-and-so who recruits from Mississippi State turned in Cam Newton. So he turned in Auburn as well.
Yeah.
He turns people in. That's what he does.
He felt like he had Cam Newton.
Sorry, bro.
Yeah, I mean, the leagues.
He got Dak, and he had his little moment in the sun, so good enough.
Well, Jay, it's always it's been more than 47 minutes, so I appreciate your time very much. And
it's 20 years, man. We've been writing concurrently in the SEC. It's been fun, man.
Yeah, you and I started the 98?
Yeah, 98 was my first year covering Auburn. So
yeah, we got in the car and drove to LaGrange, Georgia, looking for Terry Bowden the night that he quit.
Oh, good times. I remember this is back when you wrote for the Post-Herald. They would call your house periodically and try to get you to buy the Birmingham News.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't treating you like you were a reporter. They were treating you like you were a regular Birmingham resident. And you were trying to get them to give you an offer for the Post-Herald, and they wouldn't let you.
I know. I thought this is probably not a good sign.
It's not good. Not good at all. I still tell that story every now and then. It's funny.
All right, man. Good catching up with you, and I'll see you on Thursday in Birmingham.
Whenever it is, yeah. And hey, I want to say up, swat up to the Rebel Grove folks. Always cool when I go over there and get to talk to them. Hope you guys aren't mad about what I said a few months ago. No big deal. Love you guys.
They'll get over it.
All right. See
you. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a small business owner, you know Visa's rules recently changed, allowing owners to pass credit card processing cost onto their customer as a line item along with sales tax. Journey Business Solutions has a fully integrated solution to make that simple for business owners. You just swipe the card just like you do today,
and you pay zero for credit card processing. Journey Business Solutions also has the latest and greatest technology with Apple Pay, EMV chip processing, next day funding, and more. If you're ready for something more than the terminal, Ben Brown and team has a tablet point of sale system that does inventory, marketing, loyalty rewards, employee scheduling, and time cards. It makes your life much easier. It normally costs $1,200, but if you let Ben know you heard about it on the podcast, you get it at no cost and still save monthly versus what you are paying to process today. Journey Business Solutions can do business nationwide. They often work with merchants previously declined and can get you out of your contract. Send Ben an email at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. The process is very easy, and he will get back with you right away to get you started. The podcast is also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades, and no one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his website. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. The results are updated daily. You see what you want, and then send Harry an email. He'll take care of the rest. It's ha@harryalexander.com. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan, just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, fabulous lease deals. There's great service after the sale. It's an easy car buying experience. You can take my word for it. I've done it. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Now back to the show.
Podcast also brought to you by Right Way Meds, located in Holly Springs, not your typical pharmacy. If your loved one has been confused by multiple medication bottles, confusing labels, or waiting at the pharmacy multiple times per month, they have a solution for you. Under the program, all the medication arrives monthly, packaged in easy-to-use boxing strip packets, the dates and times of the doses marked on each one. Tear off the first dose of the day, next one ready when you are. So give them a call, 855-252-1011, rightwaymeds.com. If you're a doctor or medical provider, let them help you with your compliance numbers. Now that NBA free agency has pretty much died down, Neil, here's some quick just numbers for a thought that's coming from RJ Bell. Over unders for next season, obviously 82 game schedule. Golden State leading the way at 67.5 games per Vegas.
God, that's a ton of games. I mean, it's so hard to win.
You lose 15, you're under. 15. Yes,
and I mean, they don't have, they've already broken the record. They've won a title. They don't have reason to burn bright all year. I would go under there, even though I think they're certainly capable of winning more than that. An injury, they're not going to rush a guy back. I mean, Curry's got an MVP. Durant's got an MVP. They're not going to, there's not, they're in LeBron mode from here on out, where they're getting, everything is being set up for the playoffs. So if that means losing a game on the second night of a back-to-back against Milwaukee, you just do it.
One thing to note on these numbers we're giving, at the time that I saw this, there was no number for Boston because of a lot of stuff in flux at the time, so just keep that in mind. I'm not skipping Boston. They're just not included in this. Cleveland, 56.5.
Ooh. In the East, that's a low number, although I kind of sense that the deal's about done there. I'd probably go a little over, okay, just because they're in the East and they're going to play a lot of really bad teams. Houston, but LeBron's a tanker.
It's true. Houston and San Antonio in the West, 55.5, same number.
I'll go over on the Spurs because they're the Spurs.
You're still sticking to that.
And then with Houston, it's two things. Do you believe that they're going to get Carmelo Anthony? And if they do get Carmelo Anthony, how long does it take James Harden, Chris Paul, and Carmelo Anthony, how long does it take them to figure out how to play together effectively?
Yeah, it feels like an under, but then a really good team in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, that's great star power.
The Heat have that problem the first year with Bosh, Wade, and LeBron.
Yeah, it took about half a season.
Yeah.
I'd probably go under there.
The Toronto Raptors, 47.5.
I like the over there because they're in the East.
Okay.
I generally like their team. I don't think they're a great playoff team, but I think they're a really good regular season team.
Your guys in this next group, Oklahoma City and Minnesota, 46.5.
I like the over for both. I love the over for the Thunder. 46. They won 46 last year without Paul George.
Yeah. Russell probably not replicating the year exactly, but still going to be good, obviously.
Yeah, and I don't think he has to replicate the year.
Yeah.
I mean, they added Paul George. I mean, that's 20-something points a game right there. That's a lot of load off Westbrook. And then I love what the Timberwolves have done. Now, they only won 31 games last year, so 47 wins is a big jump. But they added Butler. They'll benefit tremendously from Taj Gibson. Karl Anthony Towns is only going to get better. I think Andrew Wiggins is going to get better. And I think Jeff Teague fits what they're going to try to do better than Ricky Rubio did.
Washington, 45.5 for the Wizards. This would have them fourth in the East per the lines.
Yeah, that's probably about right. Again, they're going to play mostly East teams. I'll give them the over. But, boy, Vegas is on right there. They feel like a 45-46 win team.
The New Orleans Pelicans coming in at 43.5. Just over 500.
I'm going to go under because I'm not convinced Cousins and Davis can play well together. Davis, I think, will get frustrated, and then Davis has a problem staying healthy. And the West is brutal, man. I mean, night in and night out, you're playing Golden State, the Spurs, the Rockets, the Thunder, the Jazz, the Nuggets. You're playing teams that can beat you night in and night out. Really tough.
Last three teams on my list, all with the same number at 42.5, Denver, Memphis, and Milwaukee.
42.5?
Yep.
Love the over with the Bucks. Love the over with the Bucks.
Grizz and Nuggets.
I'm going to go under with the Grizzlies. I don't know why. Just against the West. The West is so good.
So you don't think they're a playoff team next year?
I don't. I think the Nuggets have a better chance of being a playoff team.
What if I told you Grizzlies or Pelicans?
Probably bet on the Grizzlies. Their chemistry is going to be better than the Pelicans.
Okay. Just quickly here, tell me if a number sticks out. I'm going to kind of go a little quicker. At 40.5, we've got Miami, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Detroit, and Orlando. Essentially, will any of those teams finish 500? Miami, yes. Philadelphia, Charlotte, Detroit, Orlando.
Give me Miami finishing at 500.
Okay. Not Philadelphia?
Not yet.
Okay.
That's too big of a jump. I mean, if you follow much NBA, that's just too big of a jump. These 15, 16 game jumps don't really happen.
Portland, 38.5.
Under.
Okay. Lakers, 36.5.
Under.
At 34.5, we've got Clippers, Knicks, Hawks, and Mavericks.
Kind of like the Clippers over 34.5. I mean, if Griffin and Gallinari stay remotely healthy, they'll beat that number.
Knicks, Hawks, and Mavs are the other teams at 34.5.
Under on the Knicks. I wouldn't touch the Hawks. Probably go under on the Mavs, although Rick Carlisle's such a good coach that they might find a way to win more than that.
Pacers, 30.5.
Under.
Chicago, 29.5.
Under. They're going to tank.
Phoenix, 25.5.
They might go over. They have some young talent.
And then wrapping it up, Brooklyn, 21.5.
Under. They suck.
Can't even win 21 in the East?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And they've traded all their picks away, so it won't serve them to tank.
So they're just in terrible shape then.
Yes, they're in bad shape.
All right. Fair enough. You interested in the All-Star game and all that stuff this week?
You know what? I meant to write this in 10 thoughts, and I didn't. So I'll say it here. One thing that's not gone away from childhood, one of my favorite things, and I bet you're the same way, I love the introductions at the All-Star game.
That is kind of cool.
You get to see all the uniforms and stuff. I like the introductions at the All-Star game.
I really don't care past that.
Once the game starts, I'm good. It might be on in the background or something, but I'm not going to sit and like study it. And I'm happy for Major League Baseball. Give them credit. It took them years, but they corrected a wrong. It doesn't need to mean anything. It doesn't have to mean anything. And so now it doesn't. There's no meaning behind it. It's just for fun. Hopefully nobody gets hurt.
Do you have an All-Star game memory from childhood that sticks out?
Just one, believe it or not. I remember Bo Jackson hitting a home run in an All-Star game and the ball going forever to straightaway center field, maybe to lead off an All-Star game.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
I assumed you didn't, honestly. So you gave me one that was more than I expected.
There was another one, and I can't remember whether I was like 10, 9, 10, somewhere in there. J.R. Richard was from Ruston. And so he started the National League in the All-Star game. He was an Astro, and a lot of my friends were Astros fans at the time. So that was Carson's age, roughly. And he pitched that game. And then if I remember right, and man, it's a long time ago, so don't hold me to this. He had a stroke shortly thereafter and was like never the same again. Like had a stroke days or weeks after.
Hmm.
But I remember that because it was a big deal in Ruston that he was starting.
I was 9 or 10 when we had the John Kruk, Randy Johnson thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do remember that.
That's about all I got, but I do remember that.
That was funny. And that was back when there was no interleague. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah, interleague has hurt the All-Star game to whatever level you can hurt an All-Star game.
Well, yeah, because like the American League plays the National League on Tuesday night, and then they start playing each other again on Friday.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious to see what baseball and who has the game, Fox, what they do with Hernandez, the former Marlins pitcher who died last September.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this would have been his game, yet he died with twice the legal limit with alcohol and cocaine in his system. How do you honor him without deifying him? How do you do that? I'm curious to see what baseball decides to do.
Yeah.
Because he would have been a big part of this game.
Cozart, obviously, in the game from an Ole Miss angle. A couple guys have been up and down. Did you see where the Redbirds are like 56 and 34 or something? I know it's just AAA, but good grief. They have their best record at the All-Star break in franchise history.
That's an amazing record.
Yeah, something like that. I saw that yesterday.
You see the records of the Dodgers and the Astros at the All-Star break?
Yeah, and especially for the Dodgers since whatever date it was when they started slow or had that bad streak.
Yeah, they just don't lose.
Yeah. So I was going to tell a Don Castor All-Star game story. I'll save that for tomorrow as we are running long today. And we're going to need some content other than SC Media Day. There's only so much you can talk about that. So we'll have that and some more topics coming up the rest of the week. Again, a lot of interviews, a lot of stuff from Hoover, starting today with Bielema, Sankey, Jones, and Orgeron. We'll be back in the morning. Talk to you then.